The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Filmcast, a podcast about movies. I'm David Chen, and I have never been more terrified of Riverdance. Joining me today is Devinder Hardwar.
I guess we know what the Pope saw this weekend, right? Just one look at this movie, tapping out.
I think it was J.D. Vance.
And Jeff Cannata.
I have seen a lot of Michael B. Jordan movies in my time, but this is the first that features Michael A. Jordan as well. It's nice to be able to do an A-B comparison is what, wow, I'm saying.
That was brutal, man. Brutal.
So right there on the screen, you can do the A-B comparison.
It was, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was kind of a layup. Kind of a layup for you.
Kind of sad. I didn't do my Riverdance one, so saved myself there.
Yeah.
I always knew it was evil.
Those are vague and oblique references to the fact that today on the podcast, we're going to be discussing Ryan Coogler's Sinners, which had one of the best box office openings for an original film in the last decade. I was just talking with my...
So a failure then.
I was just talking with my colleague, Patrick Klepek on Decoding TV, about like how I think Ryan Coogler is fast becoming a, you know, Christopher Nolan-esque, Quentin Tarantino-esque auteur, where people will go out just to see a movie that he made. I mean,
this absolutely. Guy with the hand raised, yeah. Will, yeah. I'll tell you that.
He made Black Panther, which made $1 billion. Then he like did Creed. Those are both based on existing IP. Now Sinners, his own thing, is a hit. And it's just really impressive what he's been able to accomplish. So I fully support it. I'm excited by it. I'm really looking forward to his X-Files reboot. We'll see what happens with that.
Oh, man.
And oh, I think, man, he's shown with this movie that it's going to be something that everyone needs to keep an eye out. But anyway, exciting stuff for today's podcast. Of course, we got a bunch of what we've been watching for you before we get to that, and then some weekly plugs. First, though, let's talk about this. Star Wars Celebration was last week. And they at Star Wars Celebration, they did one of their favorite things, guys, announcing movies. That's a thing that
they love doing.
Will these movies ever happen?
Who knows?
Who cares?
Who knows? Who cares? The announcement that's fun, right? Because announcements are full of possibility, hope. Yeah. Hope is what rebellions are built on, by the way. I don't know if you guys know this. But yeah, you know, like, why not? And why not Mad Libs this thing together as usual?
You know what? I'm not satisfied, Dave, with announcing movies. I want announcements of trilogies, my friend. That's the only thing that matters, is give me groups of movies. Yeah. Again, will they ever happen? Will these creators end up doing literally any of the movies? Mm-hmm. Who cares? cares?
You want a chart stretching out 10 years. You just want to call your shots.
Just put that's this huge like Marvel grid out that maps out the next 20 years of movies, and that's all you really need. That's all we really need. So today, let's play the Mad Libs, guys, and let's say director Sean Levy and actor Ryan Gosling.
Amazing. Can they be there in person to announce it?
In a movie called Star Wars Starfighter.
Awesome. Which, that tells me nothing. This is
I wonder what he'll be doing. Yeah.
Which will open May 28th, 2027. I'm reading here from Hollywood Reporter. That's just 3 weeks after fellow mega Disney title Avengers Secret Wars, which bows May 7th, 2027.
Which Ryan Gosling is not in. He's totally missed that entire MCU.
Yeah.
Poor guy. I feel for him.
According to Ryan Gosling, the reality is that this script is just so good. It has such a great story with great and original characters. It's filled with so much heart and adventure. And there just really is not a more perfect filmmaker for this particular story than Sean. Yeah. End quote.
Imagine being Ryan Gosling and missing out on all of the MCU movies. All of them.
I think they're rebooting
Fantastic Four.
That's
probably by choice. Johnny Storm. Yeah.
So, I mean, look, if this
I'm
movie
excited about this, I've been snarky up to this point. Come I've on. Been really snarky, but I think this could be a really
excellent movie.
Despite everything
Jeff just said, he's actually somewhat excited about this.
That wasn't the extent of their announcements, right? They also announced trilogies. But It's a bit of a fool me once type of a situation when you trot out on stage and you announce these things and, you know, we've been told, hey, the Game of Thrones guys are going to make a trilogy and Rian Johnson's going to make a trilogy and you get a car and you get a car and look under your seat. There's a Star Wars trilogy. It's hard to rev up again. But I do think this one, it seems, is happening right there in pre-production. It's got a date. Like, I think Levy is an awesome filmmaker. I think this could be really a fun kind of one-off thing that maybe isn't super connected to other stuff, which is, I think, where Star Wars is best right now. And I am genuinely feeling a new hope for this movie. And I'm rooting for it.
Yeah, me too. I gotta say, not sure if I'm a fan of the title Starfighter. Like,
I mean,
it's kind of a hat on a hat.
It sounds cool.
There's
it
two
sounds cool.
stars in the name. And it's kind of a hat on a hat, you know?
Like, Star Wars Starfighter, a Star Wars tale.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, Star Wars X-Wing fighter, you know? Like, I don't know. Anyway, I'm not saying
that
would
be better. Maybe he's not in an X-Wing, Dave.
Yeah.
There's nothing cool. The word Starfighter. You just say that. You want to, like, fist pump. You want to play some rock music. You want to just, like, jam. That is such a great title. So
could have been Star Wars The Last Starfighter.
Ooh, there you go.
And then you could have mashed up two franchises I loved as an eight-year-old.
According to Wikipedia, by the way, Starfighter, also referred to as fighter, is a small and maneuverable spacecraft designed for combat in the atmosphere of space. So, end quote. So it's a general kind of term in the Star Wars universe.
Is this new? I mean,
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah, I'm just saying, I know the term Starfighter has existed for a while.
It's a Momopug is what they're trying to say.
I'm just saying,
that sits with me. That whole event.
Yeah. I'm just saying what is happening in the universe of Star Wars. So anyway, will this
So we know basically nothing about this is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So
it's a concept. I will say,
to be clear, the film is a standalone movie, I'm reading from Hot Reporter, that will be unconnected to the so-called Skywalker saga. The events of Starfighter take place approximately 5 years after the events of 2019's Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. According to Sean Levy, this is a standalone. It's not a prequel, not a sequel. It's a new adventure. It's set in a period of time we haven't seen explored yet. End quote. So
unconnected for now. There's always room.
You're going to be shocked to learn that 5 years after The Rise of Skywalker, somebody has cobbled together more stormtroopers and Star Destroyers, and they're up to no good. And they need some sort of starfighter to stop them.
There's something so depressing about that concept, Jeff, like that.
I know.
No matter how many, especially after watching Andor, like no matter how many times you try to vanquish these things, they always come back in some kind of evil Nazi.
It's almost like you feel like you've stopped all the Nazis. And people will learn for generations to come and will never forget.
Yeah.
And they'll never let that thing happen again.
Yeah.
Makes you think.
Lots to think about. Yeah. Okay. Star Wars Starfighter. We'll see if it actually happens.
It's going to, like, if, at the very least for Sean Levy, whatever you think of his directing talents, he can shit out movies. He can get things made. Something's going to be here. I don't know if it's going to be good.
I don't know. I
remember
like
the Adam Project? He made the Adam Project.
Okay,
that
but
was
to
a
be
movie
fair,
we
a lot of, you know, I enjoyed Deadpool and Wolverine. And
I did
also
too.
Real
and
Steel.
Free Guy.
Solid
and
movie.
Free Guy. And Free Real Guy. Steel.
Yeah.
You know. Date Night, those were fun movies, but also
that is how kind Devendra is. He's like, no matter what happens, this is a guy that can shit out movies. Like,
we saw the Adam Project. The Adam, you guys remember that movie?
I remember
we reviewed that.
I remember it.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah,
I remember that too.
But whatever. But what you definitely know is that is a thing that he shit out very quickly. And so it's like,
yes,
this is a guy that can shit out movies quickly, according to Devendra Hardwar. This is not quoting David Chen.
I'm just referring to, we don't know if it's going to get made. This one will at least probably get made. It's not like, this is not a trilogy epic about a starfighter, you know, yet, I guess.
I feel like hearing Gosling rave about the script, like we got Nice Guys, La La Land, Blade Runner 2049, First Man, okay, Gray Man, okay, Barbie and the Fall Guy. I think that track record of
his
projects
is very good. Yeah,
pretty,
I agree. I would agree.
Pretty
with
solid.
I'd agree. He's made some very unconventional choices. He was in Nicholas Winding Refn's movies, right? Like those were not. Yeah. Those were not like super commercial movies.
Yeah.
And
yet not a single MCU movie. Not a one.
That's what
poor Ryan Gosling.
Why are you watching
friends be superheroes?
Why are you obsessed with this? Why do you care?
Isn't it wild? Imagine being like one of the like top level leading men. He's tried out for these roles for sure.
No.
And to be denied.
I don't
every
believe.
Single
I don't
time.
I guarantee you he has turned
offered. Down.
I guarantee
yeah, probably,
he has turned down MCU movies. Yeah. So
now I've talked
It's by choice. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Wasn't there a time when he was supposed to be like Ghost Rider? Do you guys remember that?
He was supposed to be many things.
Yeah.
And people have fan casted him as many things. So yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, a little bit of Star Wars news for you before we kick the show off. Speaking of Star Wars, Devendra Hardwar, let's just start with this topic.
Sure.
Which is that really trying hard to not be insufferable about this. But Devendra Hardwar and I have both seen Andor season 2 in its entirety.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that fact.
Yeah, yeah. and we are actually, the embargo just lifted this morning.
Just lifted,
reviews.
Yes.
No plot details. But suffice to say, Andor season 2, which is debuting this week on Disney Plus, is incredible. It's, in my estimation, one of the most ambitious pieces of sci-fi storytelling ever attempted. And I'm blessed that I'm alive to see it happen. So that's my overall review. Devendra Hardwar, what'd you think of Andor season 2?
Two words, good shit. This is the good shit. They're giving us the good shit. And I don't want to get too excited about Star Wars anymore, because when I get excited about Star Wars over here, you guys could come in there like, what was the last one? The Acolyte.
Skeleton Crew.
Which I freaking loved. Skeleton Crew. I didn't love it as much. I loved Skeleton Crew. But the Acolyte. Come on. They're like all the, I've watched pretty much all the stuff they've put out. Not many of them have been good, but there's stuff that I really appreciated. It still burns me that kind of everybody turned against the Acolyte, which I think had a lot of good stuff. Anyway, this is
we
good.
All loved
this
Andor. I mean, we screamed from the rooftops about Andor.
We all loved Andor. Certain positions were made about Andor, which I also think we'll bring up again for this one. Have you seen this one yet, Jeff?
Me? No, I'm not special.
The first
like
episode. One episode.
I have not watched a single episode yet. I can't wait. I'm excited, but no, I have not.
It's not available yet.
It's not available until later this week.
It's not, no one has
plebs.
Access to it.
I thought it was Sunday.
Nope.
My whole timeline is a little messed up. But anyway, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. It builds on what they did before. Yeah. Really slow burn storytelling from Tony Gilroy. But I keep going back to what you were saying, Jeff, about season one, saying like, oh yeah, this should be the intro to Star Wars for kids and everything. I do have to say no. I'm sorry. This is great TV. But this is like, you know, giving a kid a really complex spy thriller, you know, like a grown-up book. Giving them a grown-up book and expecting them to accept it as Star Wars. This is barely Star Wars, but it's using Star Wars in really cool ways to like tell a story of rebellion and what it really means to fight, the fight between good versus evil, what that means on the ground
to fight
for
authoritarianism.
Normal
you know, to fight authoritarianism. Yeah. So,
and anyway. what that means on the ground. So anyway, it's good. It's not a disappointment. I kind of want to go back and rewatch Rogue One to see kind of how it all feels and interconnects. This is good stuff though. And I hope people actually, I forget if Andor season one was actually a viewer hit, but I hope people see this too.
Yeah. I think Andor season one was available on Hulu for a while.
Right.
So maybe people can catch up that way. It's also available on, 4K Blu-ray, which I'm planning to get. Unfortunately, it's not available on digital. So, like, you cannot buy Andor on digital. You can only get the Blu-ray or watch it on Disney Plus, which I'm a little bit bummed by, because I think Andor 1 is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. I think season 2 of Andor is a masterpiece. I think you need to own this. I think everyone needs to watch it. It could not be more timely for what we are going through as a country right now.
It's basically a blueprint for rebellion and how you fight back against authoritarian regimes. And it's kind of amazing that this exists at all.
It's a miracle that Disney is putting it out. Tony Gilroy not only got this made, he tricked them into putting out really a message that is explicitly against certain elements of our current government. So I think it's awesome, and you need to watch Andor season 2. And if you have not watched season 1, go watch Andor season 1. It is one of the best things that's ever been made, whether or not it's a Star Wars or not.
Great fiction.
I also happen to agree with Devendra that this is not how you want your kids to be exposed.
Oh
no, Jeff, you made this whole long argument. It was like, this is, forget Star Wars for kids. This is the way. This is the way. And I'm like,
but I didn't say this is how you introduce kids to Star Wars. I don't remember you saying the whole
original trilogy.
I don't remember that either. You know, but we'll have to go back and check the tapes. But regardless. This is a much more mature Star Wars, and it is more complicated and nuanced, and so definitely not something that, you know, start with the one with the space wizards with laser swords for the kids, and then move on to this one. Regardless of what Jeff did or did not say, Jeff, I don't remember it either, but anyway. Point being, Andor Season 2, it's out on Disney Plus this week. Devendra and I have seen it. It is a worthy follow-up to Season 1. Check it out.
Check it out. And also shout out to Bo Willimon, who is, you know, writing again this season and basically helped save Severance season 2 as well. So he is just on a roll right now, too.
Indeed.
Man.
Indeed. Let's take a break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more of what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by Storyworth. I want to tell you about a way to make Mother's Day extra special for your mom this year. I did this for my mom a few years ago, and it was so wonderful. This is a gift unlike any other. It is heartfelt, it's gonna make your mom feel loved, and it's gonna give you something to cherish for many, many years to come. It's called Storyworth. Here's how it works. Every week, Storyworth emails your loved one a memory-provoking question that you get to help pick. It's questions like, did you ever get in trouble in school? Or how did you decide how many children to have? These are questions that maybe you never thought to ask, or there was never a really good time to ask. It's questions that get to something that probably has never come up in your relationship with your loved one before. And then all your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. They can do it however long or short they want, doesn't matter. And they can either write a story or record it over the phone for Storyworth to transcribe for them. And then you'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. So you get to enjoy their retelling of these stories in real time as they're doing them. Stories that maybe you already know, or maybe you'll be surprised by stories that you've never heard before. And so then after that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. I know my kids, I'm so excited I can share this. I did one for my mom for Mother's Day years ago, and one for my dad for Father's Day years ago. Families love Storyworth, and that's why it has more than 40,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/filmcast. That's storyworth.com/filmcast to save $10 on your first purchase.
storyworth.com/filmcast.
All right, guys. I went to an early tax day screening of The Accountant 2.
As one does.
I paid $20 of my own money because you cannot use A-List with early tax day screenings like The Accountant 2.
Wow.
And
you guys, we're all familiar with early tax day screening rules.
Right. Absolutely. Now, so The Accountant doesn't come out till this week.
The Accountant 2.
I have to say, my wife just came back from Colorado, where she was being treated for a medical situation, and so this is our first time back together after a long time away. And I'm like, I really want to go see this early tax day screening.
So you choose to torture your wife? Wow!
Because
amazing.
Here's the thing,
that's
guys.
Love.
Here's what the rationale was I can never again say that I've went to an early tax day screening of any movie, right? Like, this is my one chance in my life to say I went to an early tax day screening of a movie.
You'll regret this for the rest of your life. Yeah.
So that's why he forced his wife to come back home early to make the early tax day screening.
Some PR person at wherever this movie, Amazon, I guess it was, MGM, did the Antonio Banderas meme where they lean back really pleased with themselves from Assassins, where like it's like, holy shit, The Accountant 2 is releasing in the same month as Tax Day? We have early Tax Day screenings. And that's what I went to.
They didn't want to put the movie out.
Right.
Oh, no, that would be too much.
Because the titular accountants would not be able to come because they're too busy working.
They're busy.
They're too busy working.
So it's going to hurt the receipts, but you can have early tax day screenings for friends and family of accountants.
I don't know if you guys saw, you know, Jeff is joking, but Wall Street Journal actually published a story called Accountants Finally Get the Sequel to Their Favorite Film, The Accountant. And this is an article about how many accountants, their favorite movie is The Accountant.
Just like my favorite TV show is Only Murders in the Building.
Right, because Jeff is a huge fan of the word only.
And a murder.
Okay,
I'm a big buildings guy.
The article begins, Leigh Olfin got fed up at work recently while trying to learn how to use new AI automation software. So the 37-year-old accountant did what she often does when she returns home from a stressful day. Watch The Accountant. Like many other people in her field, Olfin is obsessed with the 2016 film because it bestows ass-kicking qualities on someone in her decidedly nerdy profession.
Yeah.
The movie stars Ben Affleck as Christian Wolf, an accountant with autism who uses both math and martial arts in his job auditing the books for corrupt businessmen. It's our John Wick, she said, referring to the movie franchise centered on a legendary hitman.
Whereas the real John Wick is only John Wick for actual assassins.
For actual people, for regular people. But she estimates she has seen The Accountant 20 times, and it's now part of her Christmas movie rotation, even though the movie isn't set during the holidays, end quote.
When asked to give it a ranking, she gave it a CPA.
All right. So, The Accountant 2. Here's what I'm going to say about this movie. It is way too long. It does not need to be. I think it's like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something ridiculous like that. But it is pure dad movie. And what I mean by that is it feels like it could have come out of the 80s, right? In terms of both the
where
plot.
Where all dads come from.
Yeah, where all dads
all
come
the current
from.
Dads
in terms
come
of,
from, yeah.
In terms of like the action, the sort of dynamics of the action, and also its attitude towards autistic people. Yeah. Which is like,
read the room, accountant two.
I have to
room.
Be honest, pretty hard to watch because I just watched. Here's another thing I didn't even tell you guys about. Like, it's not even on the list, but I watched 11 episodes of The Pit this last weekend in a row.
Oof. Are you okay?
Not a great way to experience that show. Gonna be honest.
Yeah.
However, it has a very sensitive depiction of neurodivergent people.
Yes.
Multiple neurodivergent people are in the show. And I was like, this is a very like sensitive, well thought out depiction of it. Ben Affleck plays Christian Wolf as kind of a collection of ticks, that it's kind of like the Rain Man school of autistic acting in a way that's like, I have to say, I personally found pretty offensive. But you know, I don't
still lined up for that taxi screening, sir. Wow.
it's still a more sensitive depiction than our own Secretary of HHS.
This is true. This is true.
Indeed. But
who is an actual piece of shit? Sorry. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. pretty offensive. I found the movie The Accountant 2. But if you're looking for that kind of throwback to like, hey, when we didn't really need to put that much work into our depictions of neurodivergent people, and hey, we just want to see a bunch of white people shooting a bunch of brown people. Like, if that's what you want, then I think you're going to get a lot of The Accountant 2. You know
you
what I mean?
Say, here's my $20, sir. Yeah. Deduct this from my bank account.
and look, I mean, I will say in terms of my own enjoyment of the movie, like I did not appreciate those aspects of it, but there is something to how ridiculous this movie is that kind of like makes it's almost like it's not so bad it's good, but it's like a so ridiculous it's kind of
it's period it's very good. Camp the first yeah, movie is very camp. Campy
and I was never bored. I was never bored throughout the movie. It's a little too long. There's some subplots that go nowhere, but like if you're looking for, again, like a kind of movie that you would watch on TNT in the 80s, this will scratch that itch for you. And some people are looking for that. So
a lot of dad movies also have the like very unique thing you live in, right? For Miami Vice, he has a houseboat, has an alligator in it.
He's an Airstream in this one.
He has an Airstream.
Yes.
Jack Reacher, he takes the bus. They all have their own, like,
How is this coming out the same time as Working Man? You know what I mean? It feels like this is the, didn't make a good decision there. This is the same audience. These people come out to the movies like twice a year. You got to space these out, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There is a shocking amount of screen time dedicated to Ben Affleck's character's dating life in this movie. And I couldn't help but wonder if it was at the behest of Ben Affleck himself. Like, because the idea is that Christian Wolf, the character he plays, has a really difficult time getting involved in romantic relationships. And I wonder if this is Ben Affleck being like, we got to put this in the movie. It has nothing to do with the plot. It's just, there's so much time just him trying to like get with other women. And it's like, Ben Affleck is probably in the stage of his life where he's like, I want people to know, A, I'm available, B, it's hard to be Ben Affleck. It's difficult to be Ben Affleck. It's difficult
to
try to date.
His entire dating life is the most public thing in the world.
Yeah, can you imagine being Ben Affleck and trying to date people at this stage, right? Like, it's hard.
Who can reach those standards?
Take a moment to be sad for Ben Affleck.
Sad for Ryan Gosling. Now let's be sad for Ben Affleck. Yeah.
I think one of the tweets I saw about this topic was like, basically, there's only two women in the world that can be with Ben Affleck, and they have to work in shifts.
And they're both named Jennifer. Yeah.
Right. And they're both named Jennifer, basically. Anyway. So, The Accountant 2, it's more of the same ridiculousness from The Accountant 1. It has decent action. The whole thing is grossly offensive in general as a concept. And so if that all sounds appealing to you, you're going to have a great time watching The Accountant 2 when it hits theaters this weekend.
Is there room for an Accountant 3?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is the possibility of an Accountant 3, even if it takes place in the past. So, you know, remember we had this whole debate about John Wick Chapter 5, like, and I was saying it's very normal for a movie to take place in between other sequels. So. But Jeff did not like that at all. All right. Devendra Hardwar, hit us up with something you've been watching this week.
Oh, yeah. I checked out this movie that I've been meaning to see for a while. It's called On Becoming a Guinea Fowl. It's directed by Rungano Nyoni. And this is it's kind of a thriller. I don't know, kind of a murder mystery too. But it's mostly like a very interesting look at life for a middle-class Zambian family. And it is... it's set in Zambia. It's showing you how people are living there, but it's also very much, it starts out in a really interesting way. Woman's driving down the street. She sees a dead body on the street. It's her uncle. So begins a a set of things that has to happen for families. Like, oh, your uncle's dead now. We got to start the funeral. We got to do all this stuff. And it's about a woman basically coming to terms with what her society needs her to do when it comes to respecting this family member. But also, he was kind of a piece of shit. So how do you do that in a society that is very much tradition based and is very much about always honoring the dead and never really seeing anything bad about them? And it's entirely that the uncle was not a good guy for very obvious reasons. And it's kind of interesting to see the main character kind of wrestle with her impulses to kind of do something and say something versus the family, which is very much, not really about that at all. And culturally too, like, it's a culture run by the older women in the group, the aunts of the family. And even they are the ones who should be protecting young women in, you know, within the family. And yet they're the ones who are kind of allowing this to happen, because the downside of saying something bad about abuse, sexual abuse, whatever is happening in your family, is worse than, just trying to make everything look calm on the surface. So it's about that tension. It's kind of noirish in that respect, but I also think, like, just being set in Zambia and having, like, seeing what families look like there and how people live, it's that alone is kind of interesting. The setting itself makes it unique. And I think this is just a really well-made, well-shot film. It's really cool. I kind of wish it ended in a way that I found more fulfilling, but maybe that's just, like, what my needs are coming into a movie like this. Like, it's a noir thriller that doesn't quite give you the conclusion you expect, but even then, it's still worth a watch. And I'd recommend checking it out. It's on Becoming a Guinea Fowl. It's on video on demand right now.
Yeah. Interesting name for a movie. Like, I heard about this movie. I heard it's very good, but on Becoming a Guinea Fowl, I don't know what that evokes for people.
What does that mean? It
certainly didn't evoke what you just said.
You gotta watch the movie to find out. Yeah.
But it's on video demand. It's something Devendra Hardwar has been watching. Becoming a Guinea Fowl is the name.
It's no Starfighter as a title, but, it's a cool title.
Jeff Cannata, you and I both had a chance to watch Nathan Fielder's season 2 premiere of The Rehearsal. Devendra, did you check this out as well, or... You get around to this?
I was literally all Android all the time this weekend, so I didn't get to see this.
The Rehearsal, by the way, we talked a lot about the first season of Rehearsal. We did full spoiler chat after dark on the full season, which I highly recommend people watch. In fact, I think this is the show that I said, if you want to introduce your kids to Star Wars, watch The Rehearsal.
Yeah.
That was the one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what you meant. Familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, don't show your kids The Rehearsal.
We all loved The Rehearsal,
yes.
If I recall. I certainly did. So I was very excited that season 2 was debuting on Max, the one to watch for HBO. There's nothing like this show. There's nothing like anything Nathan Fielder does, but there's also very much nothing like the show. It's kind of like, what if an alien came to Earth and was trying to figure out how humans work? That's kind of how the Rehearsal is.
Yeah.
And, the season 1 sort of unravels like an onion, and there's layers to it, and then it sort of folds back on itself, and it is a very complex, interesting organism. And so it's hard to judge season 2 by one episode, because I suspect it will evolve similarly. But already it is so bizarre and awesome and ambitious in a certain way. Like, it begins talking about it really is Nathan Fielder having a monologue of like, hey, I understand I'm supposed to be doing a comedy show here, and HBO paid for a comedy show, and I'm supposed to make a comedy show, but also, like,
I don't really care about that.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about tragedy, like, some of the most horrible tragedy. And I don't even know, as was the case in the first season, I don't even know where the line of reality is here. There's an extended sequence in the first episode of him sort of presenting evidence to a real expert, and I don't even believe much of what he's saying is accurate. I don't know. But man, it's fascinating. It gets into really interesting human behavior that we can all relate to very, very quickly. Using what are ostensibly regular people, and sort of treating them like lab rats, but in a way that I think Fielder is attempting to be sensitive about in his own sort of insensitive way. I'm just hooked immediately. I don't know how you feel, Dave.
I feel the same way. Now, the thing is, the rehearsal season one, episode one was such an incredible episode of television. And I think it really set us up for a show that we didn't end up getting, which is, I think we thought it would be like a Nathan For You style procedural episode structure where every week it's like a different person who's trying to rehearse something. And it really becomes a lot about Nathan Fielder by the end of season one. And season two delves further into his psyche by showing us some of his obsessions. And it seems like the whole season is going to be about this one subject. That's what it feels like, right?
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows where it's going to go? I think it's going to go in interesting places.
I feel like this show has the potential, as season one certainly did, of spiraling.
Yes.
Like he starts one way and then he just follows the thread off into this other thing. And I think by the end of the episode one, the subject becomes a metaphor for something else already.
Right.
So I am not entirely confident that by the end of the season it will have anything to do with airlines.
I think that's accurate. And I think that what the rehearsal does allow you is just get some insight into this person's obsessions. That's really what this whole show is. It's like, what is this person obsessed with? And they've been given massive resources and millions of dollars to kind of explore that obsession. It's really remarkable. Like, it's actually ridiculous to me that this show got a second season. Like, I don't know.
Agree.
It's not like it was some massive hit. I don't know why HBO decided to give them millions more dollars to make a second season. But I'm glad they did, you know, like.
So there's something he uses the millions of dollars for in the first episode that I'm not even certain is real. I don't think he actually built what he claims to have built in the first episode. I think they're using a location and claiming it was built, but I don't know. I don't know. And either way, it's fascinating. I think.
I don't agree with you. You know, like it's, I think they've shown enough to convince me that it's real, but you know, I think that's one of the great things about Nathan Fielder's work, particularly in the rehearsal and particularly Nathan For You, is he makes you question the nature of your reality. Like he makes you wonder how much of this is real and not real. And
where's the line?
That's always a thing that the viewer is needing to navigate when they watch his shows. And it keeps you on your toes. It's like, oh, you can't just like take everything at face value because there's always some kind of deception involved. And I really appreciate that. So having said all that, I'm in all the way. This is so weird. This show is so weird and wild and unpredictable. I'm definitely going to be watching all six episodes of The Rehearsal season two on HBO. So Jeff and I are on the same page about this one. Let's take another break for a sponsor. We'll be back with more and what we've been watching right after this.
This episode of the Filmcast is brought to you by LinkedIn Talent Solutions. As a small business owner, you don't have the luxury of clocking out early. Your business is on your mind 24/7. So when you're hiring, you need a partner that grinds just as hard as you do. That hiring partner is LinkedIn Jobs. And when you clock out, LinkedIn clocks in. LinkedIn makes it easy to post your job for free, share it with your network, and get qualified candidates that you can manage all in one place. So how does it work? Well, you post your job and LinkedIn's new feature can help you write job descriptions and then quickly get your job in front of the right people with deep candidate insights. You either post your job for free or pay to promote. And promoted jobs get 3 times more qualified applicants. And at the end of the day, the most important thing to your small business is the quality of candidates. And with LinkedIn, you can feel confident that you're getting the best. And based on LinkedIn's data, 72% of small businesses using LinkedIn say that LinkedIn helps them find high-quality candidates. And you can let your network know that you're hiring with their Share with Your Network feature. And you can even add a hashtag hiring frame to your profile picture and get twice as many qualified candidates. Find out why more than 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring today. Find your next great hire on LinkedIn. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/filmcast. That's linkedin.com/filmcast to post your job for free.
Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Jeff Cannata, I think you got one other thing you wanted to mention, right?
Yes, this is something that I have been avoiding, but a number of people have reached out to me and said, you got to watch this show. You got to watch this show. Why aren't you watching this? This seems like it was made for you. Why aren't you watching the show? And, it to the point where I feel like we need to bring back hashtag slash tag was very useful to me back in the halcyon days of useful Twitter.
Ping us on Blue Sky. People
yeah, now Blue
that.
Sky's
shall
the place,
say,
man.
Shall we say it? We're doing it, right? So yeah. If you want to ping us, #/tag on Blue Sky is the way to do it. We're doing it. We're doing
do
it.
I love it. I love getting recommendations from the audience. This one, a number of people reached out to me. Forgive me for not having specific names to credit, but it was quite a few. It's a show on Netflix called The Residence. And the reason that I had been sort of avoiding this one is I don't want to think about the White House right now. You know, this is a show set in the White House. This is a whodunit murder mystery set in the White House. And, you know, the world is I'm at the point now, I think I've made very clear. I'm in a different place than I used to be as far as my own mental health. And the things that I used to be able to enjoy, I have a harder time enjoying. And so, there's certain things that I used to be able to get, you know, these really dark, you know, challenging things that I would leaped at the chance to like put myself through. These days, I'm looking for, lighter fare. That's not relevant to this one, but it's tangential in that I'm also not interested in being presented with like a functional White House that feels like it's not connected to any part of life mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's a number of shows. It feels like, you know, in the post West Wing / House of Cards / you know, there's a bunch of, it's very in vogue to like set things in the White House. So all of that worked against me ever clicking on The Residence, because I was like, I don't need that. Boy, was I wrong. I love this show. It is so fun, so quirky. Uzo Aduba is amazing in it. It's got a stellar cast of really comedians. This is I would describe The Residence as, what if 30 Rock was a procedural? It's sort of like, what if, I'm very excited that Poker Face is coming back. Mm. But like, if you're waiting for Poker Face like me, this is a good one to watch in the interim. Because it's like, what if 30 Rock and Poker Face had a baby and it was set in the White House? It's got like the same kind of cutaway gags. It's got really sharp dialogue, but it's also about the world's greatest detective. I love me a world's greatest detective. I love me a Benoit Blanc. I love me a Poirot. I love the smartest person in the room who's quirky and weird and you know, does things in an unconventional fashion, but is going to get to the truth. I love those. I'm into it. I'm a huge fan of that. And this show in the first episode, like name checks, you know, Sherlock Holmes and even Benoit Blanc. It name checks.
Wow.
In the show. Yeah. And it's positioning this character Cordelia Cupp as another in that lineage of great fictional world's greatest detectives. And I will tell you, in my humble opinion, worthy. This character is worthy of that pantheon because
wow,
Uzo Aduba is awesome. The writing is sharp. It's so fun. And the idea here, you know, upon reflection, where I was like kind of turned off by the fact that it's in the White House, the concept, the pure fundamental premise of what if a murder happens in the White House during a big state dinner function ultimately is a really juicy notion, because as the show constantly repeats, there's no other place on Earth like this. The rules here are different than the rules anywhere else. So conducting a murder investigation in the context of this place is unique. And I think that the show makes a lot of use out of that and a lot of fun out of that. Now, again, I think first and foremost, this is a comedy. I mean, it's got Ken Marino in it and Randall Park and guys, Bronson Pinchot is in this.
Nice.
Doing a wacky accent. That's all I need. Give me a Bronson Pinchot accent. He plays this chef.
Oh, we are so back as a society, baby.
I mean, come on. Let's do this. You know who else is in this making a comeback that I haven't seen in a long time? Maybe he's been working, but I didn't know it. Jason Lee. Remember Jason Lee?
I do remember.
What was the show that he did?
He was in
about
The Crow,
apologizing.
Right?
My name is Earl.
My name is Earl.
Yeah, yeah.
Jason Lee's back in the. It's. I think it's got a fun cast. It's got a great premise, and it's just wonderful characterization of the world's greatest detective. I am so in love with this. I've watched 3 episodes so far. Can't wait to watch more. Highly recommend it. I feel like nobody's talking about this show other than the people in my mentions, but I haven't heard any friends talk about it. I haven't really heard much buzz around it. Other than people like, you got to watch this, Jeff. And to which I say, thank you, because I probably wouldn't have checked it out otherwise. And it really is so fun, so smart. It's a Shonda Rhimes joint, but I don't think she's written it, but it's sort of her production company. And it's just, it's full of quirky, fun, great moments, juicy mystery. I'm into it.
Excellent. Well, glad you're loving it, Jeff. I've heard some good reviews of this one. It's called The Residence. I think it's on Netflix right now.
That's correct.
Mistaken, right? Yep. And that is what we've been watching this week. All right, folks, let's do a few weekly plugs. Welcome to Weekly Plugs, a part of the show each week where we plug something else we've been making. Got a couple of announcements this week before we get started. First of all, I do want to encourage people, if you want to get in your entries for the leaderboard for this year's Summer Movie Wager, go to thesummermoviewager.com. I think you got about like 2 weeks left, if I'm not mistaken. Actually, no, less than that. Like, you have until the end of the month, essentially, to get your entries into thesummermoviewager.com. And if you become a patron at any level, you can access our Summer Movie Wager episode early. We already recorded it. It's published. We made all of our lists. So if you want to know what not to choose, then become a patron at patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can get access to ad-free episodes, early access episodes, as well, including the Summer Movie Wager episodes, as well as exclusive After Dark. Speaking of After Darks, this week on the After Dark, the Tombstone 4K Blu-ray is coming out. I was originally hoping we were all going to be able to get a copy of this thing to talk about it, but it's looking not widely available. However, we are
lunatics have pre-ordered it all. That's what happened. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But we're hoping that the 4K will be available on video on demand. Regardless, we're going to all watch Tombstone and talk about it on our After Dark this week. It'll be my first time ever watching this movie. So now I'll finally understand what Val was about, Jeff.
Yeah, you should watch it with your wife.
Yeah, that movie is a key part of that movie, Val. So like,
it's a key part of his career. I mean,
yeah. So I'm really looking forward to diving into it. And yeah, the 4K UHD is out this week, and hopefully it'll be out on the digital as well. But we'll be talking about it on the After Dark this week. So if you want to hear us talk about an old classic, become a patron at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Okay. In terms of our own weekly plugs, I want to throw a shout out for decodingtv.com, where we are now publishing written reviews in addition to our podcasts. We got Matt Goldberg covering The Last of Us Season 2, and I just published my review of Andor Season 2. In addition, there's going to be detailed recaps of every drop of Andor over at decodingtv.com. Dan Gavazin is going to be writing those, and he has excellent attention to detail. I'm really looking forward to reading them myself, just as a fan of his work. So check out decodingtv.com. It's free to get these recaps. Free. Just subscribe for free at decodingtv.com. We hope you'll join us over there as The Last of Us and Andor and many other shows unfold. Devinder Hardwar, your weekly plug.
Yeah, check out the Engadget podcast. We just talked about some new things announced at the New York Auto Show. Also, we talked a little bit about like why it may be a good time to look into used EVs before car prices and everything gets crazy. Like, this is kind of a grace period.
Used EVs, electric vehicles.
Used EVs, yeah. Electric vehicles. And yeah. Also, I talked with Isaiah Saxon, the director of The Legend of Ochi, who is really interesting. We had a really good talk about how he used puppetry and thought of special effects. He founded DIY.org a decade ago too. Like, he's been doing stuff in the tech field. He directed Bjork's Wanderlust video. Really cool guy, really smart guy. We had a great conversation about that movie and kind of how they made it. So check that out.
Jeff Cannata, your weekly plug.
My video game podcast is called DLC. I had a really fun episode this week. Our friend Lana Bashinsky from Riot Entertainment, Riot Games, joined us. She is always joining us on our Patreon exclusive Wednesday show, but it's a real treat when she joins the main show. We had so much fun talking about Mario Kart World and Blue Prince, which is just a magical puzzle game that's available right now. A really fun episode. Check it out at dlcpod.com.
I mentioned our Patreon page where you can get early access to our Summer Movie Wager episode. And I do want to shout out the summermoviewager.com, which is put together by Dennis each year. Of course, we never want anyone to donate if it in any way causes you financial hardship. We would love if you support us for free by leaving a star rating for us on Apple Podcasts. It really does help people to find the show. So if you're listening and you have not left a rating for us, please pause the podcast. Head on over to Apple Podcasts, head on over to wherever you listen to your podcasts, leave a star rating for us, and do your part to make sure this podcast keeps going. We really appreciate it. All right, folks, let's get to our review of Sinners.
We've been gone a long time. We back now.
You twins?
Nah, we cousins.
There are legends of people with the gift of making music so true it can conjure spirits from the past and the future. This gift can bring fame and fortune.
Will somebody take me in your eyes?
But it also can pierce the veil between life and death.
Welcome to the Filmcast review of Ryan Coogler's Sinners. I'm going to read the plot summary from the internet. Trying to leave their troubled lives behind, twin brothers return to their Mississippi hometown to start again, only to discover that an even greater evil is waiting to welcome them back, end quote. Devinder Hardwar, let's start with you. What did you think overall of Sinners? And you know what? Why don't you tell us what format you saw this in? Because there's many different formats. We should all talk about which format we saw it.
Yeah, I did not get to see any cool formats. For some reason, this movie is in a lot of cool formats. Not all of them are available everywhere, and that's kind of annoying. I saw it in a Regal RPX screen. So it's a bigger screen. It was 235, so it's super widescreen anamorphic. But it didn't do any aspect ratio changes or anything.
Oh, and interesting.
I want to see it somewhere else. Maybe even a LIMAX just to see what some of these wider shots look like.
Yeah, let's just pause, I guess, to talk about that a little bit. Jeff, what format did you see it in?
I saw it in LIMAX.
Yeah, I also saw it in LIMAX. And there were multiple parts where the aspect ratio changes. Most of the time, it's really abrupt. Most of the time, it's like you cut to a new scene and then it's a different aspect ratio. But there was one part that I'm not going to say what it was, where it does change gradually. And that was very, very cool.
Incredible.
That was really amazing. So, but you saw an RPX, still a great format, Devendra. What did you think overall of Sinners?
I think this movie rules. I think Ryan Coogler has really become sort of a master, just of this form. Like, he is doing something really new and interesting here. This is an original movie that is both about the power of music, but also really does that visually in really interesting ways. And also is a kick-ass, a horror movie, too, a horror action movie. And I want to say a lot more about what this movie actually is. But we're going to save some stuff for spoilers. But needless to say, This thing rules, and I am so glad Ryan Coogler gets to be out here also geeking about film formats and like being on all the interview shows right now too. Like, he is getting his own presence out there. Shout out to him. Like, he is kicking ass with this thing. This movie rules.
He's going to become, I think, if he's not already, like a huge force in keeping the art of movies and film going alive. And that's really, really exciting. Jeff Cannata, what did you think about Sinners?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say what I thought about Sinners is best summed up in the form of a limerick.
Let's hear it, Jeff.
A thrill ride from dusk until dawn, infused with the power of song. With two Michael B's, this film you don't see, you just sit down and try to hold on.
Mmm. Nice.
I also loved it. Maybe my favorite movie of the year so far. It will surprise no one to learn that I had no idea what this movie was about. The movie takes a minute to get there to be what it's about. And I honestly think you could trim like 20 minutes out of the first act of this movie and
probably
and be a little tighter. But, I loved it. You know, it is, an incredible view of the South and a very specific time period. Wild to be playing South of Midnight, the video game, while also watching this movie. Like, it's, you just kind of don't get things set in this place with this kind of emphasis on music, and they're thematically very linked, different time periods, of course, but they're both so unique and so distinct. And then they both come out like within weeks of each other, like a couple of weeks of each other.
Yeah.
That is wild to me.
It's a great coincidence. Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Great coincidence. Really highly recommend South of Midnight. And I will say, if you like Sinners, if you're listening to this review, having seen Sinners, loved it like I did, like Devendra did, and want to continue that vibe, and you have an Xbox or a PC, highly recommend playing South of Midnight. Anyway, the use of music in this movie is exquisite. The texture and composition of this place and time is transportive. I loved being there. I loved just the feel of that place and the people. And I think Michael B. Jordan's awesome in this. He, of course, is playing twins, playing two roles. And I think it was very clear to me at every point. I mean, a lot is done with costume, but it's very clear to me which of the twins he was at any given time, which is, you know, that's no small feat, right? And
I just got to give a shout out to the twin magic happening in the movie. The very first shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of the twins, they're standing next to each other, and one of them smoking a cigarette and hands it to the other person, and then they pick it up and they smoke it. And it's like, from that point on, it's like, oh, there's no doubt that you're watching two separate people. Like, it's just
the passing of the cigarette's amazing. The smoke wafts between them, which is
it's like, a flex. You don't
realize how difficult that is to do.
We've come such a long way since Jackie Chan's Twin Dragons,
right?
Where there were visible,
like a dividing line in the middle of the screen to divide the two.
You set a cup down on a table, and then the other guy picks it up off the table. You know,
it's remarkable how little you think about it after the first scene. Like it's like, oh, it's two Michael B. Jordan, but then like after that, it's like, it doesn't even come to mind that it's the same guy playing both people at that point.
And every shot that involves the two of them doesn't seem to have been considered for.
Right.
Like, it's shot the way you would shoot it if it was two distinct human beings.
Yes. I have no idea how they accomplished it.
Right. Like, it's incredible. Feels effortless.
The
very complicated notion of having the same person in the frame. Anyway. I thought he was awesome. I thought everybody is awesome in this. Like, Haley Steinfeld. What? Whoa, little Haley Steinfeld?
Yeah.
She grew up, man. She grew up in this movie. It's just a blast. You get such richness of character and motivation and set setting the table, setting the chessboard before it really becomes what this movie is, which is, you know, this action horror movie. And it, I think, enriches all of that because you care about these people. You're invested in their lives and the outcomes. The supernatural has layers, right? This music itself is a supernatural force in this movie, which is so cool. And there's this really incredible sequence toward the middle that is just a flourish of sort of celebrating music, black music, the history of black performers. It's really cool. So I heard Coogler describe this movie. I guess the code name when they were shooting Sinners was grilled cheese sandwich or just grilled cheese, I think. He described it. He said, you know, we called it that because, you know, you can make a grilled cheese quickly, but everybody loves it. Like, it's real, it's good. It's always going to be good. You're always going to be up for a grilled cheese, but you can make it fast. And I was like, if this is you making a movie fast, that's pretty awesome. Like, you just wanted to like shoot this one out. And this guy is supremely talented. I am so in for the rest of his career and what things he's going to present to us over time. And the fact that this movie is so visually arresting, so compelling. There are sequences that we'll talk about in spoilers that are literally just two people standing in a doorway talking that are like, I was gripping my chair, like the tension, I'm holding my breath during these sequences. And it's literally just people talking, nothing else. Static shot, people talking. And that is great filmmaking, in my opinion. That is when you are really cooking on all cylinders, is that I am so invested, so into this that, you know, I'm hanging on every word. And there's a lot more than just words that fly in this movie, but it works on every level. This is just a blast. You come out of this flying high, man. It is really fun. I loved it.
I also really love this one. You know, you talked about how you thought the movie could be shorter. I think it's a feature, not a bug. I mean, this movie spends 1 hour setting up everything. 1 hour. There's nothing like supernatural weird happens for an entire hour. And it's just, who are these people? What are they trying to do? What is this place like? What are the environs like? What's the mood in this area? It's really setting a tone and a sense of place that most horror films don't have, so that when the action and the killing start, you actually care about who's dying and what's going on and how they're dying. And I really, really appreciated that. I also really, really appreciated that something amazing happens in this movie that takes place in the 1930s, which is that there is Asian characters in it. And when one of them opens their mouth and starts speaking with a Southern accent, I was like, holy shit, this movie's incredible. Like, because those people actually do, like, existed, right? They existed. And yep. We never see them depicted on screen, right? We never see them depicted in a way where they actually feel like they belong to this place, because they always have a foreign accent. They're always like foreigners. But this movie actually is like, no, actually, like, Asians were have been a big part of the South, and they didn't all speak with foreign accents. And I really love that about Sinners. So just wanted to give a shout out to that. But yeah, this is Ryan Coogler's first like straight up horror movie, I think, that he's ever made. And he's shown that he has what it takes. He knows what makes these movies work. He knows how to achieve what makes them scary from a visual perspective, from a editing perspective. And I had a great time with this one. It's a movie that has like just a really distinct sense of place and really rich characters. And that's pretty notable for horror movies in general. So I am a big fan of Sinners. All right. Those are our overall thoughts on the movie.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, the holidays have come and gone once again, but if you've forgotten to get that special someone in your life a gift, well, Mint Mobile is extending their holiday offer of half off unlimited wireless. So here's the idea. You get it now. You call it an early present for next year. What do you have to lose? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Limited time 50% off regular price for new customers. Upfront payment required. $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, or $180 for 12-month plan. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds may slow after 50 gigabytes per month when network is busy. See terms.
Let's talk about some spoilers starting right now.
I thought up an ending for my book.
It makes no damn sense.
Compels me, though.
I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end.
When I buy a new book, I always read the last page first. That way, in case I die before I finish, I know how it ends.
You can't handle the truth!
Inconceivable!
I came here to tell you how it's going to begin.
I did appreciate that the movie does conceal from you what is actually going on until probably the last, like, 20, 30 minutes, which is when they're trying to, like, figure out, like, Winnie Masaku's character is trying to figure out, like, they're, like, hates, right? They're, like, ghosts or whatever. And it's like, oh, actually, I don't think they're hates. Like, I think they're vampires.
Yeah. And just get right to it. Yeah.
And I do appreciate that. it's kind of them. They're trying to figure out, like, what part of folklore are these characters actually from, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that was a cool discovery process.
It's always great in a horror movie where they're like, yeah, it's just freaking zombies, guys. We know the rules. Let's do the thing.
Come the on. Garlic moment was pretty great, yeah. Where they'll have to all eat garlic.
That's straight out of The Thing, by the way. Like, yeah. Great little nods to other movies. Yeah.
I know I'm insufferable, but I didn't know there was anything supernatural about this movie before I watched it. Mm-hmm. I thought this was like a period gangster movie. And it's what this is why I protect myself from this is why I live unsullied, right? This for moments like this where all of a sudden I'm in a completely different movie. And it really does feel like Ryan Coogler's From Dusk Till Dawn, which is like, you know, two movies that are butted up against each other, two different, completely different genres that are in the same movie. And I thought the gangster movie was pretty darn good, but not great. But then the movie gets great, and that's why I felt like, well, we could have lost some of that and gotten there a little quicker. I do appreciate all the richness and character, investment that we get in the early parts of the movie. But for somebody that didn't know where we were headed, it just felt like it was spinning its wheels a bit for me. And maybe because you guys knew where we were going, you were willing to sort of indulge it more.
But. I mean, we didn't know if it was fully vampires, but the trailers.
The trailers were quite ambiguous. Like, you know, something weird happens, but like the trailers are pretty ambiguous about what.
I mean, the first thing I said, they weren't clearly saying vampires, but the first thing that came to my head was like, oh yeah, this is Southern vampires. This is True Blood.
Devendra and I were debating whether this is a spoiler, and of course for Devendra, it's not because he knew instantly. He's like, oh, they're vampires. Like obviously their behavior.
I see the marketing as they are talking about this movie. They're talking about vampire movies, so whatever. But now, as a vampire movie too, like, it's a really fun riff on it too, because it's the vampires have a point. This is one of those movies where it's like, yeah, come join us in our egalitarian community where we're just hanging out and singing songs and doing river dance. I always knew river dance was evil. But like,
it's like a kill him with kindness kind of deal.
Kill him with kindness. But you're either there or you're in very racist Mississippi, where your existence is at a daily threat from just other humans and the society that is built around you. So why not just like say, screw this, let's go murdering everybody. They make a good pitch. I'll say that. Yeah. And it's really funny to see like the juxtaposition of what the vampires are kind of selling and the time that this movie is taking place. I agree with you, Jeff, that I think the beginning maybe just takes too long to really get going, but it is very languorous. It is a very, it is like, as you'll, as we'll talk about, Val Kilmer's slow draw Southern accent. It is a very, it just takes its time. And you kind of have to kind of just linger on those moments too, where it takes too long. And I appreciate that about that. This movie takes time getting to where it's going. And I think when you get to the vampire stuff, maybe we move too quickly. I do actually think, like, I could have spent longer in that whole, the whole vamp, the big fight at the end or something. Like, I wish we were more there. But overall, like, what a wonderful, like, juggling act of what this movie actually is. And then in the middle, you've got the actual set piece of this movie isn't the vampire invasion. It's like him burning down the house, basically, with music and jumping into the future and jumping into the past. Incredible stuff.
So badass. Yeah. We can all agree that this is a prequel to Blade, right? Like, this is, we're setting up Michael B.
All
Jordan.
All you need is
Blade.
Sprinklers full of blood.
He should be doing Blade. He should be doing Blade. I don't know what we're doing. Yeah.
Oh, they, maybe Marvel's not going to get it done, but Ryan Coogler's got this covered, baby. I loved it. So, and so many incredible, incredible moments that put people in positions of having to make really tense decisions. You know, all of the, like, invite me in stuff is so well done. The fact that you get Haley Steinfeld turned very early, like, the white girl got turned real early, and you can't trust her, but also we love her. And that, and you're right, DaVinci, to point out that juxtaposition of, like, hey, we're not murdering you. We're just inviting you to the cool club. Yeah. You know, it's the, you're not in the cool club where you get to live forever and party. The party never stops. You guys love this party. Why would you ever want it to end? It's a cool positioning of that, that Faustian bargain, right? Is like, you're giving up your humanity. And I love the, forget the name of the character, but the one woman who, you know, knows about all the folklore and is tied into the supernatural. And she's just like, nope, you kill me as soon as this happens. Like, she is not having any of it. And she's sort of like the moral compass of the movie, and all that stuff with the lost child. I mean, there's just so much richness in every single character. Even, you know, Delroy Lindo's character, like, all of the side characters get this kind of rich undercurrent of you caring for them. It's not just this Michael B. Jordan vehicle. It really is a tapestry of lots of different characters that all, I think, are compelling and interesting. And as each one falls, you know, even what's his name? The big dude who goes first, goes, takes a pee. What's his name? Like, it was a word, like hamburger or something. Anyway, even him, like I care about
cornbread,
each of these.
Cornbread, I think.
Cornbread, thank you. I care about each of them in their own way. And, you know, the Asian couple, when the husband goes out, you're like, no, don't go to the car, dude. Don't go to the car. It's so good.
I'm going to read to you from some publications from the 19th century. And these people are describing a new race of people in the United States. They say that this group has bestial, quote, bestial, ape-like, or demonic features. Another writer said that this group of people hate our order, our civilization, our enterprising industry, our pure religion. This wild, reckless, indolent, uncertain, and superstitious race have no sympathy with the English character, end quote. The people, of course, they're referring to are Irish people. And it's, you know, most people alive today probably don't remember or may not be aware that in the late 19th century, early 20th century, racism against the Irish was really intense in the United States. And I do think it is significant.
The Italians too.
Yeah, indeed. I do think it is significant that the villain in the movie is an Irish person. That there is something about, like, this is a group of people that, like, since this time period has been assimilated, but, like, wants to entice, you know, all these black people in this area to, like, be part of its collective. And it parallels the theme of the movie as many people think of it as a theme for cultural appropriation. I think that's kind of an interesting lens to view it in, right? Is that like, hey, we want your stories and your music and we'll make it part of our own. But like in doing so, obviously something is lost. And I think this movie like brings that concept out in the through the lens of like a horror movie, like a vampire story. Like they're these are not just blood vampires, they're cultural vampires as well, right?
It's also it's Ryan Coogler existing in the Hollywood system. It is give me your ideas and I'll make the big, beautiful, big budget movies of them. Like it's so many things. There's so much talk about like his own deal with this movie too, which we should mention, which is just kind of wild, even though other folks have done it. Other big name directors have done it, right?
Yeah. So I think it has, it is an enjoyable genre film on its own. Like if you just watch it for the thrills, I think you'll get a lot of it. But I think like probe a little bit deeper. And I do think it has stuff to say about music, about cultural appropriation, about racism. It's a rich text. But what's great about it is you don't have to think about those things to enjoy the film. Like you can just kind of enjoy it on its own level.
All part of the grilled cheese. But we should also say this movie is very horny and it's good to see because we've lived through years of, you know, beautiful people who are not horny. Like we're just like, we've lost all any semblance of sexiness or actual sex, the act of sex in movies. This movie just kind of goes for it and is kind of like unabashedly, yeah, these are hot people who want to bone all the time and do fun things. And it's fun to see. It is just fun to see. Like, this is a movie for grownups. This isn't Ryan Coogler like toning it down to, you know, make something for kids or whatever the Eternals did. That poor, sad,
that super hot, sexy scene in the Eternals.
Yeah. That we all think about every day. No, shout out to this movie for letting its freak flag fly a little bit too, and in ways that feel unconventional now. Just love to see it.
Yeah. Any other sequences from the movie that you guys want to bring up?
Everything. We should talk about the ending, the post-credit stuff too. Like all that is really fun.
I did appreciate that when there's a lot of stuff in the movie with fluids. Like there's a scene where one of the Michael B. Jordans eats Hailee Steinfeld's drool, which is like...
No, she spits in his mouth. And but that feels like a nod to Tom Popo, by the way. But like, yes, love it. Just like, really?
Yeah, but I just like...
Things are just going all over the place, man.
Just going all over the place. I like that is true. And then and I like when he kind of stumbles into them together. He just like freaking opens fire. He doesn't even like... There's no question about like, I'm just going to open fire on this person like...
Yeah.
She's a danger to my brother. I'm opening fire. And then it removes the doubt. Like you can imagine there'd be another version of this movie where he doesn't open fire and it's like, oh, is she can she talk her way out of this one? Blah, blah, blah. But they're just like, nope, we're just going to remove all that immediately.
Get it.
Something bad is clearly happening here. There has been some controversy online with the fact that the Asian mom is the one that kind of in some ways dooms them all.
Sells them out.
Cause she like invites the vampires in. Right. And, Lee Jun Lee, I believe is the name of the actress who plays, Grace. And, I just want to say, I found her actions to be I can imagine a younger David Chen watching this movie being very frustrated at that character, but I found her actions to be completely understandable. Like the movie did a good job of setting up that her child is at home. Her dad's probably the child's dad's probably dead. Like she needs to get home to her child. Like, did you guys have any reaction when?
I mean, it's very much also like similar to Do the Right Thing too, where Black communities and Asian communities have coexisted in this country forever, but sometimes it's a little uneasy too. Like sometimes the needs of one group will outstrip the needs of the other. In this case, the mom just wanted to get to her daughter, but it does doom everybody else. Like her actions are fully justified, but you did screw everybody else in this building. So, you know, that is just how that goes down.
We've geared up for a fight. What are we going to do? Sitting here with our sharpened wooden stakes? Nah, now we got to put these things to use, baby.
She'll at least have a plan. She'll at least have, like, meanwhile, Michael B. Jordan's like, just give me a second. I'm coming up with a battle plan. Like, something. But no, none of that.
Jeff, I thought about your review of Steven Soderbergh's presence while watching this movie, because when you think about it, it is kind of silly that vampires need to be invited inside the house, don't you think?
I mean, it's a rule, is a rule, is a rule, right? Yeah. It's a rule. I don't know.
It's
don't,
like
I
these are super supernatural creatures that exist beyond time and space in a way you can't possibly comprehend. They've existed for hundreds of years. They can like give life, eternal life to people, and you gotta invite them into the house. You can't.
Because
they
there,
can't,
there are
well,
other rules.
Just
there are other
the
things
threshold.
Happening. Right. There's spiritual protection of your homestead. Like it's supernatural stuff versus other supernatural stuff. Yeah. So that's how I've always.
It's the same reason that you know your covers. Protect you from monsters, right? Mm-hmm, get under your covers, the monsters can't hurt you. It's there's no logic to it. It's how it feels. I'm safe in my home, and I have to actively invite you in. And these are not rational superstitions, right?
These are thousands of years of superstition, like built on each other. Like at the New Year's when you sweep out all the bad spirits from your house or something like that. Like it's every culture has its own version of this.
But I did really appreciate when Cornbread couldn't go in the house. And,
oh, so good. And the way he plays it off is so great.
Why wouldn't you invite me in? Like, you know, I'm a gentleman. I feel like you need to invite me. You know, like it's.
And then it just goes on a hair too long. Yeah. It's you know, like, and you're just like, oh, and then they're like, oh, right. No, I got it. Now I know you can't get it.
Something's not right here. Yeah. It's
so good.
How that plays
they
out.
Get a little too nice too. Like they put on their nice phone voice, you know, when they become turned and they try to like talk to other people. It's like, oh,
yeah.
My friends don't talk like that. That's a little off. Do you want to say? Glad we saved room for a Ku Klux Klan massacre. Thank you, movie. You know what we wanted to see.
Oh, yeah. That was just like a little cherry on top, right?
It really felt like a...
We got a Tommy gun over here.
Didn't need to do that, but it's like, okay.
While we're here, I'm going to pull out this gun
about
you.
Might as well just mow. You got to have Michael B. Jordan holding a Tommy gun mowing down Ku Klux Klan.
And right there, like,
what's the
puts
point
it up there.
Of having a period movie with Michael B. Jordan if you're not going to have him mowing down Ku Klux Klan members?
What's in the case? He's been talking about the case all the whole movie. What's in the case?
BT Dubs. Real bummer they didn't have that case earlier. You know, like, we were supposed to have the case.
That's a shame.
Well, they left it outside, helpful. Right? That was the whole thing.
Yeah, that was the whole
thing. It was
thing.
In the car.
Like, could have had the case, and then you find out what the case is.
It's
damn shame.
I will say, you know, I do want to talk about the ending, Devendra, but I do think like, the idea of vampires that, like, are trying to turn you and also like know all of your history is terrible, and also they're part of a collective, like this is the first time I think I've seen that specific depiction. I've seen like versions, like different slices of that before, but the idea that they're all part of a collective, they all know your thoughts and your secrets, like that's like, genuinely
they're
terrifying.
Not all part of the collective, but the lead vampire knows your thoughts.
Sure, that's fair. That's right.
And that's been like part of like your sire will know certain aspects of your soul or
that's
something.
That's fair. Devendra is the vampire expert. But I haven't seen it depicted as vividly as in this movie. And it's a very terrifying concept of like, oh, this is a person who like knows my deepest innermost secrets and thoughts and can use those to manipulate me to get me to leave this house in the case of this movie. Right. So I thought that was usually like when I watch vampire movies, that dynamic doesn't really exist. Right. Like from what I can recall, like,
Have you seen True Blood?
I don't think
we've ever talked about True Blood. Yeah. And True Blood is like a similar thing where like the sire vampire will have certain abilities over the other ones. But even What We Do in the Shadows kind of does this a bit too. So
I loved the depiction of some of the stuff and how much restraint Kugler shows. Like there's a couple of moments where you see like just like deep focus of a body leap into the air, but then we cut away. He's never like, you know, overtly showing the supernatural abilities of these things, but you just get a hint of it. And it's so much creepier and cooler when it's just like, you know, you cut away right before they pounce. Ah, so neat.
There's a moment when Hayley Steinfeld is walking away from the three white people and one of them like jumps into the air for like a second and then it cuts away. And then the next thing you see, Hayley Steinfeld's back at the barn and she's got the gold coins and it's like, What happened in between, you know, and it's not, you don't feel good about it, you know. It's like
I feel like that is also Ryan Coogler, just looking at him in these interviews, dude is a total geek. I feel like that is almost a Blade 2 nod, because that was one of my favorite things Guillermo del Toro did in Blade 2, where there's a lot of blade leaping and leaping from like the front of the frame to the back in like the big sword fight scene or something. So I see a lot of influences there. Ryan Coogler has shouted out Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, because the sort of flame in the vampire's eyes is something from the bad guy in that movie. That movie rules. I've talked about that movie. That movie's awesome.
It's very good. Yeah.
I love that he is like pulling all these little bits in his own, like stuff from The Thing, stuff from horror movies he's loved. And then he gets to be unrestrained when it comes to like how he's depicting music and how far he's taking this narrative too. Like that whole, that long take scene is just a beautiful thing. And then at the end of it, you see the vampires outside the building looking in. And the building is just like all the walls are torn away because I guess they're seeing everything happening inside. Just what a beautiful sequence of events. We don't see movies typically, I think, going that far these days.
I completely agree. I think that that crescendo of of just a celebration, and you get the sort of George Clinton guy, and the, you got all these eras of music and celebration and reverie. And I mean, that alone is worth seeing the movie in IMAX. Like that sequence alone, like the way the sound surrounds you.
Yeah.
It's just spectacular. And what a cool indulgence, you like to build this movie that really doesn't, you know, you would think the big set piece is going to be, you know, the massacre, and to have it be this musical performance. And, you know, shout out to Miles Caton, who is this like kid prodigy R&B singer, first movie. A lot of this movie rides on him.
Yeah. Learned to play guitar for this role, if I understand correctly.
I mean, he's clearly a musical prodigy. Like he's like a kid, you know, he's on he was on TV performing at like 9 or something. He's amazing, but also has to carry a lot of the emotional. I mean, he's who we start this movie with.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
End.
Yeah. End well,
the movie with.
Yeah.
In some
this
ways.
Movie is so well cast too. Like the guy who plays his father, the preacher, Saul Williams. He is a renowned poet and visual artist. I talked about his movie Neptune Frost a couple of years ago too. So to see these like, just like icons of current black culture too, in a movie like this, in a big budget Hollywood movie. It's just amazing to see. It's amazing this has happened.
I don't know how I feel about the 90s post credit scene.
I love it. Yep.
There's things about it I love, but I also feel like it defangs the movie a bit.
Mm.
Pun absolutely intended.
Tell us why, Jeff.
Well, we get to this like kind of pat acceptance, like, man, that was the best day of my life. And isn't it great? Aren't we happy to be vampires? And aren't you happy? And we're nice to you. And there's no threat or danger here anymore. And we've been living in the world and it's just all okay. And I just felt like, man, there's so much, what's the word I want? The way the movie ends, the journey we've been through is so harrowing to sort of cut to, well, it was all right. It's all okay. It's all fine. Felt a little. Now, there's things I love about it. I do love, I'm hoping there's a Sinners 2. You know, like I said, I want this to be the prequel to Blade. I want us to see. And it's funny. I will say this too. For much of the beginning hour of this movie, I was like, do we really need two Michael B. Jordans? I'm sitting there going, okay, I get it. I'm impressed. Yep. But like, do we really need to reach? And then I'm like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand. It's because we get to have our cake and eat it too, Michael B. Jordan-wise. You know, of course he's going to have to fight himself. And of course we get to kill him and save him in the same movie. I don't know. I'd love to hear what you guys think about the ending, because I just felt like there's a part of it that just kind of undermines the entire stakes of what I just witnessed.
I mean, I don't think it fully goes against, because what they wanted to do was just save the family, bring everybody over to the vampire side. The decision was not to do that, so it wasn't necessarily to kill them. And this gets into like vampire lore stuff too. I do love the stories of like, you know, vampires living for hundreds of years and the lifetimes they lead too. So to have that meeting, and you get Michael B. Jordan in full 90s style, you get Haley Steinfeld in like 90s style hoop girl earrings and stuff. Just the aesthetic, like everybody in my theater was cackling because it was, it looked hilarious, but also there was something heartfelt about it. Like it is a little pat. I give you that, but I don't know. I kind of bought it in this, for this particular scene. Yeah.
I've been trying to think through what this movie is trying to say. You know, like it has many things to say, in my opinion, or it has many things it could be saying. And I'm trying to think through, like, what is it trying to say about that character? Right. Sammy, I think is his name.
Sammy. He rejects his father. He rejects the church.
He rejects the church in favor of music. Yeah. Like he turns away from the church and he holds on to the neck of the guitar. Yeah. And I think what it's trying to say is, this is just, you know, I'm just putting out a perspective out there. And obviously people who disagree, /filmcast@gmail.com. You can email us and let us know. But like one interpretation could be that the concept of music and the blues is diametrically opposed to this movie's conception of the gospel and salvation, right? That's why like they're explicitly set as opposed to each other. Is like he's choosing one instead of the other,
or they're the same. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, again, this is my interpretation, and I guess the blues is a thing where is a thing that this character finds so important it is worth turning away from his faith and family for. And there's something kind of lovely to the idea that 60 years later, the music has stayed in his life. Like he's still doing, he's not doing other things. He's not like skiing or something else. He's still playing music. He's a famous musician because of it. And when Stack asks him if, hey, we could make you live longer if you wanted to, like he rejects that offer. So
you don't want to be an 80-year-old forever.
Yeah, you don't. Well, maybe you'll be rejuvenated.
Right. It's this idea, right, of like there's something that is transcendent about music, and in particular, Sammy's version of music that is worth preserving beyond virtually anything else, right?
I would argue that it's not direct in direct opposition to spirituality, that it is spirituality, that the sequence and the entire refrain of, you know, we heard it in the trailer when we started this review, that line where she says, you know, there's this notion that there's music that is, or musicians that are so proficient with music that they will conjure the spirits of the past and the future, right? That is that, and we see that happen in the centerpiece of this movie, that there is this spiritual notion to the playing and the enjoyment of music, that the release that they are all feeling in that barn, right, is a spiritual moment, is a revival meeting, is a communion with the divine, and that his father's conception of a relationship to God is a flawed, limited perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a I was agreeing with you, and then I was going to say, but in contrast to like this conventional gospel that his father's preaching,
but his father's saying you have to give that up to be in communion with God, and his position is that is my communion with God, right?
But the movie also makes it clear doing it in the other way outside of the church invites evil.
Right? Yeah.
As a pop cultural performer, you're inviting this other stuff into your life. And Sammy's thing is like, it's like, yeah, okay. I'm okay with that. Like, so literally the vampires are coming because of the power of his music, but also that's living in a creative industry, right? Where you've got vultures all around you, or, you know, shitty producers, or the industry itself. Like it is, you were trying to create something beautiful in a system that often will be a little evil. He has come to terms with that, whereas you could just be in the church and just be pure.
It is both the cause and solution to his problems, right? It is your salvation as well. The literal guitar is what vanquishes the enemy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, in a literal sense, the guitar kills the bad guy. Yeah. So it is his salvation and his, right? And I think that's what the movie is really saying, is that, you know, sometimes it's worth dancing with the devil, right?
You sell yourself a little bit to express yourself fully creatively. Yeah. Maybe.
I think the only thing I would add, Jeff, though, is they play music in the church too. Like, they're singing music in the church too. There's something that the movie's trying to say about blues specifically, or this person's blues specifically, I think, that is like transcendent in a way that just quote unquote regular music is not.
It does tap into like the whole feeling of human experience in the way that church music doesn't typically.
In a sense too.
Yeah. So you can sing about sexy things. You can sing about dirty things, you know, and not just praise. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts on, so actually I never finished my point, Jeff, which was, so for that reason, it did kind of work for me. I was a little distracted by Michael B. Jordan's outfit.
I love it.
So good. Yes. It's so good.
But it did kind of work for me that it's like, oh, this person found this like transcendent ability and kept at it, like gave up a lot to keep it and kept at it for his whole entire life and maintained kind of the integrity of his gift. And I did appreciate that in a way that like, you know, could the movie have ended after the Ku Klux Klan people got shot to death? Probably. But like, it was a nice little kind of button on.
And also, those characters, Michael B. Jordan's character, that character, is that one stack? And Haley Steinfeld's character likely could not be together in the world that existed, you know, in their initial timeline. Like, being a couple together would be very, very difficult. And there is something beautiful about like, okay, well, we're undead now, but at least we can still be together. There is something special about that too. Really reminiscent of Interview with the Vampire there. Yeah.
It turns out all you need is to just become a vampire. That's going to solve most of your problems.
Give it to me right now. I think we all can need it. Save us.
At the end of the day, folks, Go ahead, Jeff.
I don't need to criticize a movie that I absolutely loved, but there is a moment at the end where, not that end, the earlier end, where they're out in the water, they vanquish the thing, and then the sun comes up, and it's like, well, the sun was going to come up anyway.
The sun was going to come
like,
up. Yeah.
All those vampires being out in the sun was not their fault. Like, the vampires have to be smart enough to not be in the sun during the sunrise, right?
You know.
Anyway.
Jeff. This is the second movie I've seen in the last 6 months where a huge portion of the premise is a vampire being too distracted to go inside when the sun comes out.
Yeah.
Where literally the entire plot hinges on the vampire being too distracted to go inside. So it's like, I don't think it's an atypical. This is
they didn't have geosynchronized watches back then.
Right. Yeah. Right.
No phone alert saying when sunrise.
I feel like if I'm a vampire, my number one priority is not be outside during the sunrise.
Well, Jeff, I think we've learned you should not be attacking Michael B. Jordan in this movie.
Fair enough. At any point. Ever.
Really?
Yeah.
Not in the Creed movies either.
Yeah.
Okay. At the end of the day, it is really impressive that Ryan Coogler made a movie. And that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Filmcast. You can find more episodes of this podcast at thefilmcast.com. Email us at /filmcast@gmail.com. Our theme song comes from Tim McCune from The Midnight. Our spoiler bumper and weekly plugs music comes from Noah Ross, who also edited this episode, with video assistance provided by Kurt Mega and John Barry. Next week on the podcast, folks, we discussed the possibility of reviewing The Accountant 2. Did not get much support for that one, I have to say. We discussed Until Dawn. That was a good choice. But, you know, the thing that we actually have to review, it's not out in theaters, but it is going to be out on Netflix. It is Gareth Evans' new movie. It's a movie that has been in the making for many years. Like, my sense is this thing was really, really hard to make. That is my guess. And so I am excited for it because I really think like in many ways we are living in the Gareth Evans era of action. Like, we are in the Gareth Evans, Chad Stahelski, John Wick era of act. Like, he is one of the most influential action directors of our time. Right up there with John Woo, right up there with Jackie Chan. Like, I think he's up there, even though he has made way fewer movies than those people. So I'm really looking forward to watching Havoc and talking about it with you here on The Filmcast. That'll be next week's review. I want to give a reminder to folks, get your Summer Movie Wager picks in at thesummermoviewager.com. We're going to have our Summer Movie Wager episode out in a couple weeks. It's available now for patrons at patreon.com/filmpodcast. And stay tuned for our Tombstone episode on this week's After Dark at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Thanks for listening. Until then, we'll see you later.